Your SteveJonesShow.com audio is coming up next. Audio and podcast of The Steve Jones Show, a service of Sunbury Motors, North 4th Street, Sunbury, and Sunbury Motors Kia, Routes 11 and 15, Hummel's Wharf.
Sports talk where your voice counts. This is The Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now, from the Sunbury Motors Studio, here's Steve Jones.
We have a lot of fun with all the segments that we do here, and we have a lot of fun with the interviews that we get. For example, like Willie Randolph last week. It looks like we're going to get Doug Gottlieb from CBS Sports next week to talk about the NBA draft. Now, I mean, as Kevin will tell you, the NBA is not the most important story up and down the valley, and he's absolutely right about that. But it still is a significant national story, and week by week we try to go where the news happens to be. All right, and Doug Gottlieb, I think, will open up the door for us with a few things next week that we can talk about with the NBA draft. A guy that is a go-to guest as far as I'm concerned, and the feedback we get is tremendous every time we have Tony Knopp, the CEO of Spotlight Ticket Management, on the show. Tony, welcome to the show. Great to have you with us.
How are you? Good to hear from you guys.
Yeah. Let's start with the World Cup. You have championed soccer on this show for years as a place where corporate partners are putting their money. Tickets are being sold left and right. Now we have the World Cup, and the U.S. won the other night. All right. Now, short term, we know what that means. Long term, what can it mean?
You know, it depends on what happens in the next few games. All of the signs look great. There's a lot more corporate involvement in this World Cup than there was in the last one, and even in the one prior, in South Africa and in Germany. There's a lot more people there. There's a lot more activation around it. However, the ratings were not as high as they were for U.S.-England, which is understandable. I mean, they were playing Ghana and not England. But it was also a little bit lower than the U.S.-Ghana game last time. Now, granted, that was a knockout stage, and the U.S. had advanced, so we'll see what happens here. But it's really vital for the U.S. advance here. And what's been the most interesting has been the reports that the U.S. contingent down there is the largest.
The fact that it's in Russia in 18 and Qatar in 22, what are the pluses and minuses, and maybe more minuses than pluses to that?
Significant minuses. Look, the reality is the corporate dollar right now is rushing to China. It's rushing to Europe, mostly around, you know, the soccer activation that we're seeing over there and some strong leagues with, you know, La Liga and Serie A and the EPL. And in China, we're seeing a large growth in sponsorship from our customers looking to activate around a you know, growing industry. You're not really seeing that in Russia, and we're definitely not seeing that in Qatar. So I do think that this is kind of an all-in World Cup right now for a number of the sponsors. They're going to activate around this and spend more money under the understanding that they're just not going to approach Russia or Qatar the way they are here. I mean, we already have precedents for this. The Olympics were just in Russia, right, and it was a total dud for the corporate community.
How important would it be for members, that representatives of the corporate community, to get in front of FIFA, get in front of the International Olympic Committee, and explain to them in business terms the pros and cons of locations?
You know, they're trying. There's been two sponsors now who have gone back to FIFA and said, we don't want to hold these games in Qatar. We find this to be ridiculous. If you look at the amount of money that was put into infrastructure in Brazil versus the amount of money that was put into infrastructure to host here in the United States, it's roughly 200 times the amount of dollars that were spent to get the infrastructure ready. And not only that, it's the working conditions that they're seeing in Qatar, with thousands of people dying, actually working in indentured servitude to build the arenas and to build the stadiums. So the sponsors are starting to come back to FIFA. The problem is FIFA has more arrogance than almost any organization you're going to see. I mean, these guys have a $1 billion slush fund, and they're a nonprofit. They're exempt from local taxes, so they'll make all of the profits from Brazil and walk away with it, and they don't reinvest that in anything. If you have a $1 billion slush fund, why aren't you helping build stadiums? Why are we rewarding a World Cup to a country where it is physically impossible to play soccer? It's the average temperature is 123 degrees in Qatar when they're going to have the World Cup. So I do think you're going to see an uprising from sponsors. I don't think they're going to be very vocal about it. I think it's going to be more of a, look, we're just not going to get involved.
Well, that's vocal. But that's
vocal enough as far as dollars go, but I don't think they're going to make a big PR push about it, right? I think they're just not going to be involved.
I mean, FIFA is so arrogant. It's pointed out to me that, they had their own terror alert when they were there and ignored it. So
yeah, they, you know, FIFA, for example, in Brazil, they've had so many deaths at soccer games over alcohol sales that they've banned alcohol sales. And, you know, Anheuser-Busch being the sponsor that they are, you know, we knew that FIFA was going to do something around the laws, but their approach to it was so arrogant that literally the approach was, well, we don't care about their laws. It wasn't, let's try to meet in the middle, let's find a way, we have sensitivity to those things. The response was literally in his statement, I don't want to sound arrogant, but we will be serving alcohol at those events.
Can they
And it's a matter of time when you do that before you see a backlash. I mean, out here, we saw it about 15 years ago with the Anaheim Mighty Ducks at the time. Right. They were the hottest thing going. You couldn't get corporate sponsorships or suites if you tried. And it was a different ownership group. And they were so arrogant and so terrible to the corporate community that when the team started to lose, they all left. And then they started begging people to come back when the team came back and won the cup. And they found a very cold shoulder in response. I think this will be the same.
Yeah, one of the worst things I've found over the years that an organization can do is that when they find and achieve a level of success, that they have a little swagger and feel they're bulletproof. And that's the moment because, you know, they need to always, organizations always need to act like, hey, look, you know, we're working hard. We're still on the rise, and have to continue that attitude, especially when they have success.
We're one step away, right? And it's okay to fluff people here and there. We get it. We get that you want to have a cold Super Bowl here and there.
Right.
But now we're going back to Minneapolis. I don't understand it, and I think it's a matter of time before corporate sponsors finally say, you know what, you know, we're willing to support this here and there, but there's a point where we all hit a wall and say, look, we don't want to spend the first week of February in Minnesota. Nothing against Minneapolis. It's a great town. Wonderful in the summertime. First week of February, forget it. We don't want to go there. And that's something that we're seeing across the board. It'll be very interesting to see how other sports capitalize on this. That's why you're seeing such a big growth. And it's, you know, a lot of people chuckle about it until they see the numbers in the MLS. The MLS has proven to be corporate friendly. They're,
yes,
you know, working their way around what people need, and they're making sure that they're flexible and they don't have that arrogance. And it's created this opportunity for these leagues to really thrive.
They have right now in MLS, I believe, 8 of the franchises in MLS are playing to 98% of capacity or better right now.
Yeah, and it's funny because all of these sports that come up, like, people don't remember when the NBA was a secondary thing. People don't remember when, you know, this, you know, I once watched Bob Bowman from MLBAM speak, and he said the three top sports in the 1950s were horse racing, boxing, and baseball.
Right?
Nobody cared about football or basketball or the sports that we care about now. And what people might not notice, but they're definitely noticing on the corporate side, is MLS is selling out. It's a very fan-friendly environment because the games are 90 minutes in length with no exceptions. There's not a million timeouts. And the MLS is going above and beyond, creating experiences that they're not getting in other places. And so it will be interesting to see which leagues put the arrogance aside and succeed and which don't. For example, the NHL has been extremely successful the last 2 years. They're even talking about expanding again. We'll see if they learn their lessons from last time. But that will be interesting to see, is how these leagues react and adapt. FIFA, back to what we were talking about, is not reacting or adapting, and quite frankly, they don't care to. What's going to happen there is not only are the corporate sponsors going to get loose in their saddle, but UEFA and all of the European teams and European leagues, like, you know, the British League, are going to start saying, maybe we don't want to be a part of this anymore.
We're with Tony Knopp, the CEO of Spotlight Ticket Management. I was going, my follow-up question was going to be, do the corporate partners feel very comfortable about saying, you know, we'll put our money into MLS and Barclays Premier League, and the heck with it. We don't need to go to FIFA.
More and more so, and you see the competition already rising, right? You've got Barclays Premier League, you've got the UEFA Cup, which is sponsored by MasterCard,
right?
And you've got the World Cup sponsored by Visa, right? And as those start to grow, look, MasterCard is, I'm sure, very interested in making sure that the UEFA Cup becomes a bigger and badder entity than it is now, so that they can get more bang for their buck. I mean, look, the reality is what we just saw, what you guys just experienced firsthand with Penn State football, is about to happen with soccer.
Right.
You're about to have the creation of a Super League, a point where Real Madrid and Barcelona and the major teams, Manchester United, are going to say, we don't care that you're trying to put a salary cap on us anymore. we need you a lot less than you need us. Mm-hmm. We'll go form our own league.
All right, now to change topics. The Redskins today, their trademark went down 2-1. Now, the last time this happened was 1999.
Mm-hmm.
It was appealed. They won. But the big difference is social media had no impact on that at all. It may this time. Corporate partners love the NFL. You sell a lot of tickets involving the NFL.
Oh, yeah.
Okay. Is there any concern about the Redskins logo, trademark, or whatever when it comes to this?
On their side, on the Redskins side, yeah. I mean, look, it's an unknown secret outside. Well, maybe it is known, but outside of the sports business, but well-known in the sports business, that the Redskins are all about the dollar. Right? They always have been all about the dollar, more so than most NFL teams. The Redskins, the Cowboys, they're more about let's try to monetize every single thing we possibly can. So it's not a surprise that this is happening with their team. And, you've kind of got the arrogant approach with them that you're not going to get from other clubs. I personally don't think if they change the name, it's going to matter to the corporate sponsors at all. In fact, I think it might make it a little easier for some of the corporate sponsors to be involved in it.
Right, that's my point.
The reality is with all of these social changes, they eventually take time. From 1999 to now, it just evolves. I mean, we just wrote a piece that was in the USA Today about how all of the military sports sponsorships are starting to go by the wayside.
Yeah, right.
And that's not something that just happened overnight. It was voted on by Congress 4 times in the last 9 years. So I think every time this comes up, it's going to get closer and closer to the change, and they're eventually going to do the same thing that the Stanford Indians did. Most people don't remember that the Stanford Cardinal were not the Stanford Cardinal.
Right. Marquette, they changed.
Mm-hmm.
Eastern Michigan changed. Now UMass and St. John's, they both changed.
Yep.
Look, if you change, guess what happens? People go out, they're going to buy merchandise with the new logo on it.
Yeah, absolutely. And quite frankly, unfortunately, when you're talking about bottom line, there's still going to be a market for the Redskins,
Right.
The Redskins logos and the Redskins stuff. I mean, look, we've talked about it on this show before. One of the top 10 merchandise sellers in the NHL is the Hartford Whalers.
Right. They don't exist.
Nope.
they're,
and they sell more jerseys and gear than 20 NHL teams currently.
Yep. That's exactly right. Fox is in an interesting spot. You and I just talked about the World Cup. They take over the World Cup in 18 and 22. Now they take over the U.S. Open for the next 12 years, beginning at Chambers Bay in Washington State. You and I love golf. How do you feel about the timing now in today's sports world for Fox Sports with those two events?
Yikes. I mean, the numbers last week were not good for the U.S. Open, and people are going to say it's because Keimer ran away with it. There's more drama in having a competition, but the reality is drama is built by seeing if an underdog can overtake a established person.
Tiger Woods.
We saw it with Palmer. We saw it with Nicholas. I mean, we see it in all kinds of sports. Over in the U.K., a couple of weeks ago, they had a boxing match that sold 80,000 tickets because they wanted to see if the underdog could overcome the old warrior. The reality is Tiger Woods is not old warrior anymore, whether he comes back or not. And so the drama for the regular fan, that is, I don't need to know much about this. I just need to know that nobody beats Tiger one-on-one. DeMarco couldn't do it. When Wai Yang did it, it was a big deal. Rocco Mediate tried it. That's not there anymore. So, okay, Phil, he's about done.
Mm-hmm.
None of these new guys is really establishing themselves as somebody who can hold on down the stretch and impose that fear where it gives us all the ability to unite behind a Rocco or behind a Chris DeMarco or behind an underdog of any kind. There's just too much parity. They have to get another Jack or another Tiger, or it's just going to relegate back to where it was.
And and Fox decided to go with the 12-year contract for that. They go with the back-to-back World Cups, and Fox invested a lot of money in it. And they happen to be also two sports where, and I'll want your opinion. My opinion is these are two sports where your fan base that watches really wants to watch and listen to somebody that's their kind of guy that you just can't insert big time announcer and have him do it.
Yeah, absolutely. I want to watch Jim Nantz. I don't want to watch, Joe Buck call golf.
Right.
He's not part of that community. And it's the same thing. You're going to have an even bigger issue when it comes to soccer. People want somebody who really knows what they're doing and has been a part of it for a long time. And that was the reception we saw when they put Gus Johnson on the BL
exactly.
games.
Right? I talked to Gus about that.
He's great, but he doesn't know anything about soccer.
Well,
Well, I talked to Gus about that at the Big Ten tournament last year. You know, and he's doing San Jose Earthquake broadcast because he's trying to learn as much as he can about it. Dave O'Brien is a really good guy and is a really good announcer. But when he did the World Cup, he was not accepted.
No. He doesn't know the game, and there's only so many Ians, right? I mean, he can only call so many games.
Yeah,
so they're going to struggle a little bit with that. I do think part of what Fox is doing, though, is they're starting to see the change in the landscape, and they're trying to place their bets on where that landscape's going to be, especially when you're looking long-term. They're looking and saying, okay, we have the NFL, and it's huge. Concussions are becoming a real problem. NFL participation in wealthy neighborhoods is dropping drastically. 12 years from now, we're not going to have an entire generation of, you know, 18 to 34-year-old, you know, wealthy, semi-wealthy, middle-class and rising individuals to sell to. What's next? Is it lacrosse? Is it golf? Is it soccer? Let's place a bet on those things and see if we can make a number that puts us in the middle. And I do think that's what they're considering when they're looking at these deals. They're looking and saying, okay, well, what are the horse racing and boxing and baseballs of today? And then what are going to take their place? What's the NBA, NHL, and NFL of tomorrow? And maybe that's what they see here.
When Peyton Manning went to look for a new team, you know, he went to Miami, Arizona, finally settled in Denver. He was forced to because Indianapolis cut him. And then it became a big deal where he went. But it's the NFL. It didn't matter in the end, even if he retired. I think that's safe to say.
Right.
LeBron James, in my opinion right now, is the single most powerful athlete in the history of sports because, A, he holds the cards as to whether he stays, and, B, if he decides not to stay, to go wherever he wants. He really holds a lot of the fate of the league in his hands, doesn't he?
He really does, and it makes for a very interesting conversation that he is unfortunately not positioned to be in the place to battle. The reality is, as far as fair labor goes in any other business, he should, I mean, I understand he's a union employee where he is now, but you'd think in a capitalistic structure, he should have the ability to say, look, wherever I go, I get a piece of the team. Because I'm going to make kingmakers out of all of you guys. You're going to get rich beyond your wildest dreams because I choose you. So why wouldn't he be able to get a cut of the bottom line? I mean, the reality is that happens in almost every other business. You bring a CEO in, you bring a high-level executive in, you give them a cut of the bottom line because they bring you significant value. So what LeBron James is going to do is create a king out of a team. And the beauty of the NBA machine, which is the argument against him being able to do this, is that it doesn't so much matter what market he plays in anymore like it used to. It's not like baseball where there's a big difference when you're playing for the Yankees and the Mariners, just ask Robinson Cano.
Right.
He can go from Miami to Philly or Cleveland or wherever he wants. He's still going to be a global icon. His ultimate goal is to be a billionaire. You know, he just got $30 million in the Beats deal because he owned a part of that company when it sold to Apple. Right. You know, there's a lot of different avenues he can take, and it makes for a very interesting discussion on labor because he's worth significantly more than a max contract to anybody, and we all know that.
Right, exactly. One final question, Tony, then I'll let you go. The end of the fiscal year is coming up. You talk about for the next year and planning as to where ticket distribution goes, because you're right, you've got, what, I think somewhere 6 to 8 million tickets through
your... We're at 9 million now, 9 million
okay.
A year.
My apologies for being short.
Yeah,
of that.
It's going up fast.
No, that's great. No, that's, I'm glad we get that out there. What's the conversation as to where those tickets need to go?
The conversation right now, it's been very interesting. The teams are scrambling. They're not going to do it publicly, but the reality is it's changing faster than they're ready for. More and more people are saying, I'm just not going to buy season tickets to the Nittany Lions anymore. I'm not going to buy a suite anymore. I'm just going to get what I want off of StubHub. And if that means I'm going to pay a premium here and there, then fine. I'm going to pay a premium here and there. And we're seeing that happen across the board. So what's happening with these companies is they're either saying, okay, well, we're either going to continue what we're doing and hope that the teams are going to eventually evolve and find ways to make this worth our while, or we're just going to drop all of it and buy what we need when we want to buy it. And it's the power's come into the hands of the consumer, and it's been wonderful. It's good. It's great news for all of us, not so great news for the teams and leagues right now who need to find a way to pivot. Historically, they haven't been the best at pivoting because the reality is they're still beholden to revenue streams that come from season tickets and suites.
Interesting, as always. Tony, thank you so much. It's the most enjoyable half hour of the month.
Looking forward to chatting next time.
Tony Knopf, the CEO of Spotlight Ticket Management. We'll get Kev's reaction from this in a few moments. We'll come back with more on News Radio 1070 WKOK.
While looking for a vehicle, you know that if it sounds too good to be true, chances are it is too good to be true. You get the runaround, got to go from place to place. Well, you can just skip all of that and go straight to Sunbury Motor Company. Sunbury Motor Company has been satisfying more customers and selling more cars since 1915, so you know they've got it right. No offers that look good on paper or online, and then you get disappointed when you see them in person. Sunbury Motor Company offers a lineup few other auto dealers in the area can compete with. With the inventory of Ford, Hyundai, Kia, and Lincoln vehicles, there will be no problem finding the right vehicle that fits your needs and your budget. And the friendly, knowledgeable staff's ready and able to help you with everything from the test drive to the drive off the lot. See for yourself at Sunbury Motors. Sunbury Motors, Ford, Lincoln, Hyundai, in the North 4th Street Auto Plaza, Sunbury, and Sunbury Motors Kia, Routes 11 and 15, Hummel's Wharf. Look for them online anytime at sunburymotors.com.
Taking your calls at 800-795-9565. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now from the Sunbury Motor Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Great to have you with us. We're in the Sunbury Motors Studio. 4th Street in Sunbury, Sunbury Motors Kia, Routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf.
I have a World Cup soccer update for you.
Are you ready?
Sure. Netherlands defeated Australia earlier today 3-2 in the 76th minute. It is Chile leading Spain 2-0. And later tonight, it's Croatia and Cameroon.
There are rumors Ronaldo might not be able to play against the U.S. Sunday. Just a rumor. We'll see. Do you think, Kevin, Tony Knopp deals with corporate partners, 9 million tickets. Do you sense as a fan that the sports landscape is changing, or do you think he's wrong about that?
I'll tell you what I really agreed with when he was talking about tickets, that most people are going to single game tickets when they want them instead of trying to get season tickets and then selling them on online outlets, and you know, whether they're StubHub or, you know, sponsored by the team or whatever. I definitely agree with that. I know people that have had season tickets, for instance, to the Phillies, and have done their weekend package or their Sunday package games and have given them up because it's just easier to get those tickets from the office or from StubHub when you want to go to the games instead of trying to figure out a way how you're going to sell them.
The area that has confused me over the last 10 years is, and I understand it's a business, whether it's college or professional, and I talked about the hiring of an athletic director at Penn State. You're the CEO of a $90 million enterprise. I mean, a $90 million business with 31 different divisions to it. I mean, that's the responsibility. That's why it is a huge job, and that's why it's such a big hire. But what has really struck me over the years is that television revenues have grown exponentially in the last 20 years. I don't understand why ticket prices haven't gone down.
No, I don't either. And you know what? And I've said this many times, and we've talked about it many times. It is much easier for me to sit in my recliner, being very comfortable, not pay $5 for a hot dog and whatever, and be able to see the game better than if I was at the game. I mean, if I want the real feel of being at the game, I just turn the sound up really loud.
But here's the issue, though. If you're television, I want you at the game. Because it looks and sounds real and exciting when you're there. Which, in turn, helps them.
Now, this is why I can't understand the price of baseball tickets. For as many games that are on TV and as much television money is getting dumped into baseball, I don't understand why good seats are costing anywhere from $40 to $100, and seats that I wouldn't have paid $10 for 20 years ago are now going for upwards of $30.
Right.
Now, the NFL, you can almost make an argument if you're the NFL, because you only have eight home games. So you have to make money on eight games as opposed to baseball, which makes money on X.
Why? Your labor force is taken care of.
I'm saying on that one aspect, you can make an argument there, because you don't have as many home games.
But your labor force is taken care of.
You're saying with the TV money you have alone, you can pay for everybody that it takes to run a game.
Yes. Now, I realize there's rent and things like that, but you can make a profit in your stadium, because at that point, you're up to gravy time. You already broke even. You're done.
Well, except for having to pay the guy that are playing on the field.
No, Kevin, you're done. You TV mean paid TV, for that.
There's really that much to... No, I know we've talked about this 100 times, but I don't fathom that there's as much TV money to pay for everybody in the stadium to work there, pay for the guys that are playing the game, plus be able to pay your overhead costs. That's amazing.
Each team gets $130 million. What's the salary cap? We're done. Thank you.
And you're not paying for concessions, because you're contracting those out.
Right. You're getting the money already for that. You're contracting it out because they paid you.
Now, why am I paying $20 to park?
I'm just saying.
No,
Under the NFL deal, the television contract matches the salary cap number. Your labor force is paid for.
Now, I will not argue the fact that you don't get the same experience sitting in your living room as you do at the game. And maybe if I went to more games as a fan, I would have that same understanding. But it's just very difficult for me to justify that kind of money for just two of us, let alone a family of four.
I understand. And that, this is the part I'm struggling with. Is that I think you need to make it more palatable for the fan to be there. All right? It's a totally different deal. Dick in Milton. Hi, Dick. Thanks for joining us.
Hey, Steve. Hey, I wanted to, and you might, I don't know if you've covered this, but when I was out to the Penn State, Michigan State on the Penn State MAT bus, the fan bus, and of course we went to Michigan State and then over to Michigan. We had a day off and we toured the university, and I think it was Lefty. I'm sure you know him. He's at every home match. He's like a fixture at Penn State Wrestling and in the MAC club. But anyhow, he kept talking. He brought this up. You know that the highest paid state employee in the state of Michigan is the athletic director at the University of Michigan. And he makes, I'm going to say about, well, he makes like $1 million a year, which is more than the president of the university out there makes. And then I saw where I found it so interesting. I looked up some other ones, and the athletic director in Ohio State makes more than he does. So when you said about Dr. Joyner leaving and stuff, I don't know what he makes. I have no idea. But obviously, athletic directors at big time universities make a lot of money, a lot.
They do, but they're, you know, when you're the CEO of a, take for example Ohio State, Gene Smith's the athletic director there. He's the CEO of a $105 million corporation.
But the president of the university, Dr. Erickson, was the president of a 35,000 student plus all the faculty staff. And I mean, obviously he has other people, but so does Dave Joyner, so does the CEO. You know, he's doing that by himself and making every decision.
Right.
I guess that's my point.
Well, you're making almost all the decisions, okay? That's why you're the department head. The department head of the college communications makes like 98% of the decisions, okay? I mean, because that's your job to make 98% of the decisions in your department as dean.
You know, I mean, Eric Barron is not going to make a decision on suspending a player. Coach and the athletic director will do that. Budget, same thing. But Dave Joyner made less money than Dr. Erickson.
I'll bet you. I'll bet you in Michigan or in Ohio that if somebody listed all the people that made the highest paid state employee, they would not figure it was the athletic director at University of Michigan. Well, I'm just thinking that.
At Ohio State, though, E. Gordon Gee, who had been the president, was making twice what Gene Smith made. He was the highest paid university president in the country. He's not the president now. He got himself into some hot water. I don't know what Mary Sue Coleman, the president at Michigan, makes. I mean, when they were going through state employees and so forth. I mean, but some of this stuff, to be honest with you, is a little squirrely when they start talking about which state employees make the most money. Who was named the number one paid state employee in Pennsylvania last year?
Bill O'Brien. I have no idea.
It was Bill O'Brien. Okay?
Okay.
Bill O'Brien is not a state employee. Neither's James Franklin. He's part of the state pension plan. That's
a
difference.
Pension.
Yeah, but they're not state employees. Just because you're part of the state pension plan, he's paid by the athletic department budget, which is independent.
Wonder why the pensions aren't figured out that way then also.
Well, his pension is figured out through what he does as being a Penn State employee, but the athletic department budget pays him. In other words, he's not getting paid by state money. State money is not paying Bill O'Brien's salary. The athletic department, which is autonomous and is a business entity unto itself, is paying his salary.
Well, somebody contributes to the state pension fund, or he wouldn't get a state pension, whether it be him or the university or both.
Guess what? Guess what? He does. I mean, I know because I am. I mean, I have money taken out of my check all the time. That is, goes in, into an interest-bearing account.
Does the university pay in also?
No.
For you? They don't pay in?
No.
Hmm.
No, it's an interest-bearing account.
Okay.
You know, I mean, I get 5% taken out of mine every check I get.
Yeah, I just found it was interesting when we were out there, and this was in the Michigan paper out there. It just happened to be there at the time we were there. I don't know what Dr. Joyner made. I had no idea. I really never checked into it.
I think he made, I want to say, $369.
Yeah, that doesn't sound very much compared to these other guys. Then I mean, obviously, he has as much responsibility at same size university as they do. I guess I don't think we're comparing apples and oranges. It's not like one guy does a lot more, has a lot more responsibility at the university. I don't think they do anyhow.
Right. You know, at a major university, I cannot tell you what the budget of the ag department is, and I can't tell you what the budget of the liberal arts college is. I can't tell you what the budget is of college communications. But, I mean, athletics easy to look up. I mean, Penn State's about a little bit more than $90 million. Ohio State's $105 million. And you're in charge of a lot of different things.
I understand that. I was going to mention this, and I'll let you go. I was out mowing grass when you were talking about Kobe Bryant and talking about somebody complaining about how much money he made. I think that
Jurgen Klinsmann is the one that said that. Yeah,
right. But when they were giving, because I don't watch much soccer. I was watching it the other night when they were talking about one of the two defense backs for Brazil, and they were talking about the money man. The one guy makes $65 million a year. So I'm not sure. But there again, it might be Confederate money for all I know. Maybe it's $65 in Brazil. I don't have any idea.
Maybe they didn't figure out the exchange rate.
That's a good line.
The exchange rate could be one penny on the dollar.
But when you think about it, though, I mean, $65 million, if it was U.S. dollars like it is, you know, like it is in Los Angeles, I think he gets Los Angeles U.S. dollars there. I guess my point, $65 million seems like a heck of a lot of money.
You're on a roll, man.
Well, the other thing is, and they talk about the value of teams in sports, and I don't even know. I think it's one of the sheiks or one of the oil guys from Saudi Arabia or somewhere owns the soccer team in England, the London, and they're the most valuable team in the world compared to everybody. They're the most valuable team in the world. I'm not sure which team it is.
Man U. Man U is owned by the Glazer family. Liverpool is owned by Fenway, which is same owner. John Henry's the same owner of the Red Sox. It might be Arsenal.
Maybe it's the Spanish team then. Madrid, El Madrid, or whatever they call them.
And believe me, the oil sheiks are deep into soccer. I mean, deep into it. I mean, I'm talking money. I mean, the only person I've ever met that could put them to shame is Kevin, and he just doesn't like to brag about it.
Yeah. Well, I'm going to let you go. I was going to say my last thing about those guys is the best thing that they could do besides oil. If we ever go out of oil, the only thing they can do is supply sand traps all over the world. So, on golf course. They have a lot of them, you know. They just have to get them there.
Exactly. Right.
I'm going to let you go.
Thanks, Nick. Appreciate it. 800-795-9565. We'll wrap it up in a moment on News Radio 1070 WKOK. All right, great to have you with us, as always. I think when Tony Knopp talks about the changing landscape in sports, I think going to the future, there are certain constants. The constants are obviously the NFL, the NBA, Major League Baseball, and the NHL. They've been constants for decades now anyway, thus they have deep-seated roots with their fans. And those fans then have, obviously, children, and their children usually follow what mom and dad usually do up to a point. And I think going forward, those four constants will remain. The NFL is extremely popular. Can it be as popular as it is now? That'll be interesting to see what happens. The NBA has reached a level of popularity it has never had before. There might be a slide back, but they'll still have some level of popularity. Major League Baseball has been solid. Okay? It may not be performing at a spectacular clip, but it's solid. It's not falling through the floor. It's also not reaching for the sky either, but it's solid. The NHL has dramatically improved in terms of how people look at it and so forth. I think now the question is, who fills in the other spots? Because times have changed. Boxing and horse racing, huge in the 50s. Tennis was pretty big in the 70s. You still have tennis, and they have a good, solid audience. You still have boxing, not as much of an audience, and there aren't any big fights anymore. Horse racing, you have the Triple Crown, but a lot of people have now gone toward online betting of horse racing. You know, people going out to the track, despite, you know, Governor Rendell made a great effort at that by having the casinos be at the track. Auto racing, for example, NASCAR had a real spike, and now they've fallen back. IndyCar is on its way back up, but they'll never get to the level they were of stardom in the 60s, 70s, and into the early 80s.
I think I have the answer.
Then there's soccer. Soccer, for example, the Olympics have fallen back, too. The Olympics have fallen back a little bit. It'll remain constant, but they've fallen back. But they're not going to fall through the floor. The Olympics are always going to be big. It's worth NBC investing in them. Soccer is something in this country that has always been a wild card. You know, where can it fit? Where is it going to be? The North American Soccer League tried, couldn't get through. MLS has given it a good effort, and their numbers are good. Not spectacular, but good. And the TV ratings for the United States win over Ghana, really good, considering it was on ESPN, but not the overall number that it had 4 and 8 years ago.
I think I can tell you where the next sport is, and I'll back it up.
Probably lacrosse.
Lacrosse. I do believe that is the next big sport. I have seen a growth in lacrosse in the last 10 years at the scholastic level alone in this area. Now, the reason for this is my theory. The reason for this is there's a lot of action in lacrosse. There's not as much contact as in football, so it's deemed safer. And there's a ton of scoring. One thing that Tony said that resonated with me a little bit was he was talking about how higher-level income families are not sending their kids to play football. And I see lacrosse getting an opportunity to fill that void. There's still contact, but it's deemed a little bit safer than playing even soccer, because at least you have some protection in lacrosse, where in soccer you don't in the head.
I think what you're saying has some validity, but I think we won't know about that till 20 or 30 years from now.
I totally agree with that.
There's actually a major lacrosse league now. I think it's NLL. And, you know, people like it and enjoy it. And I also think when you look at the NCAA lacrosse championship, there's been growth in that in the last 5 years to back up what you're talking about.
Especially in the television coverage.
Television coverage, crowds. Now, the problem with lacrosse is this. It's very regionalized. It has been a Baltimore, Washington, New York, Boston corridor, okay? And obviously, it's popular in a lot of spots in Canada. The question is, Kevin, is it popular in Florida, Texas, California? That's where the youth population has shifted in those states.